Welcome back to Ladies with Gumption, episode 166 of the Humanity Protocol. I am May, and I'm here with
Tatiana
and Jessica.
We recap DCTV in a flash. You can always find us on Twitter at DCTVGumption, email us at ladieswgumption@gmail.com, send us an ask over at ladieswgumption.tumblr.com. We're available on all podcasting platforms, Apple iTunes, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, anywhere you listen to podcasts is your preference. We are there. We also have a Patreon, as you well know by now. We do talk about everything that is typically non-DCTV related. Sometimes we do Doom Patrol, Titans, things like that, but we also do HBO Max, other HBO Max premium shows like Lovecraft Country. We do MCU stuff, Netflix,
Harley Quinn,
Witcher, did Squid Game, and we're coming up on Doom Patrol next week. So if you're interested in listening to us talk about those things, we are over on patreon.com/DCTVGumption. Over in the news, we do have a lot of Ruby Rose, the ongoing
Previously on Ruby Rose drama.
There was a lot of stuff that she has time, and she clearly has receipts as well. So she basically screenshotted emails and from Caroline Dries and all of these other things. And she called out specifically the one, was it a personal assistant or somebody from the crew who claimed that she was like terrorizing the set basically and established that he was never actually working on season one of Batwoman. So they went back and forth.
She called him a lot of stuff. Basically an industry plant. But I feel like her doing that also cleared up a lot of the timeline for me, because remember last week we were like, you know, Warner Brothers, it seemed like they were trying to say that she didn't get hurt on their set. And so I feel like, you know, her giving like the dates and the email chain kind of cleared up some stuff for me, because I think she got hurt before they started filming, because her surgery was in June and they started filming in July, right? So she got, and then that makes sense to me why Peter Roth had the like response that he did. Whether or not it was a good response or not, you know, that's another question, but it now it kind of makes sense why he would say, you know, basically that's not our problem, like it's not our problem, because he signed you as the lead of the show and part of your responsibility as a lead is to stay healthy. And so I feel like, you know, he's like, since you didn't, now you're gonna cost me millions of dollars. Like, that comment makes more sense to me. But then also I feel like her documentation of what they were trying, like, you know, up to a certain point, like limited, I can understand why, you know, Hollywood doesn't stop because you got hurt. It was your responsibility to be safe, right?
Time is money, right?
Exactly. But then, like, she is hurt. You know the situation. So when they're sending emails like the EW cover thing and all these other little interviews she had to do, it just seemed like very passive aggressive about like, all the other leads have done this. If you don't do this, then it's going to ruin the cover and it's going to be all your fault kind of thing. So like, she already has pressure being injured and still having to go to work. And then on top of that, you're like, well, if you don't fly to LA, then you're going to ruin the whole entire cover in our relationship with this magazine, you know? So I feel like to a limited point, I can understand like the industry's perspective of, you as the lead were supposed to do everything you could to be healthy. Her not being healthy, she couldn't do a lot of stuff with the cast. So her as a lead, she's supposed to have like help the cast dynamic. So she can't do that, or she's limited in her responsibility of being able to do that. But then, you know, you can't change the past. She is injured. So, you know, why wouldn't you, if you're going to lose the cover, like why wouldn't they send someone up to Vancouver instead of forcing her to fly to LA or forcing her to do more,
right?
When they could easily
seen how the like CW have photoshopped people into posters. Like, y'all could have done that.
Yeah, you could have gone like to the little Le Pan or whatever cafe that she wanted to go to, you know? So
yeah. Plus, like, them not even being accommodating in the sense that to give her more time to recover as she should have also aggravated that specific injury like later on, because then she had another surgery, or she had the surgery in like October of that same year. So you know, it's just like a pylon, basically. Like, she, there's a lot of stuff going on, and her, she stands by her accusations also of Doug Ray Scott, who the WB representatives defended that he was like
right.
professional. He's never done anything wrong in his entire life.
I feel like the more layers that get uncovered, is the more confused I get about like which side I feel like I should be on.
Yeah,
it's just like everybody is like standing 10 feet down, 10 toes down in there. Yeah, you know.
I mean, I do want to lean with her, obviously, like for the reasons, because we already know in the industry, like, the power plays and the power dynamics yeah. that are already existing there, and that they could just like ruin you with a snap of their finger.
It's basically. So funny, because it's like, you know, I could, you, because like we had all of these like shade that was thrown around when she left, and I was like, the, and I think the emails that she released really helps build her like story, because, you know, if you're, you know, I could see like being annoyed that this person keeps emailing about you, you know, hey, just so, you know, I thought we were going to fix this and it's not fixed. But then also, like, if you kept getting, like, emails from Ruby Rose about things that were supposed to be happening but not happening, it's like, I can, you know, you might be annoyed. But the fact is, you know, shouldn't people be able to, like, breathe or have the right, I don't know, atmos or whatever she was talking about?
Yeah. And the funny thing is, like, there was an instance, I guess the part that I actually did laugh, where I was like, Peter Roth actually had somebody at WB, like, you typically work through publicists, right? They're doing the like, don't shoot the messenger, basically. And they're like, you know, it would be really great if you recorded this one thing for like Peter Roth's nephew or something, yeah, for his party. So, and I'm like, off. What?
Like, this, that's not like part of her job. Part of yeah. the whole like thing is like, yes, please. I know that you almost broke your neck and died or whatever, but could you please, you know, give me this video for this, you know, privileged girl that I know, so I can show her all the celebrities that I own on my network, kind of thing. That's just kind of what it feels like. Like, she, why are you making her do that? It's so stupid.
Yeah.
And you kind of imagine, like, you know, if, because she's showing us this, and this is kind of the request that she's getting asked, and, you know, but they're not taking care of her. Like, what some right. other celebrity, like Candace, how many birthday videos was she asked to record when when they weren't taking care of her in any other capacity? So it's, yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Indeed. Oh, that's that on that. We probably have more information at some point soon.
yeah, one Saturday has got to give at some point. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Melissa Benoist also did an interview with EW about the Supergirl ending and how she feels about it, and all these conflicted feelings about leaving the show behind, but also feeling emotional about it, and then promoting her upcoming book that she wrote with her sister. So that was a thing. It was nice to read.
Like, the most interesting part about that is, like, if she could do something over again, or like replace something, she would change a lot of like season one, as far as like her being a young actress. And again, this is like the thing of, you know, these young actors being brought in to lead an entire show, and it's kind of like their right. first lead project, and how she's saying, you know, she wish she had the confidence to say, yeah, actually, no, I can't do this, or mm-hmm. you know, it's too much, or you know, I would like to change something. So having like more of a voice back in that season one kind of period, things that she would do over again. So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. And even the certain scenes that she would want to refilm, because of, yeah. she would think that she would give it like a little bit more emotion or like get into a certain mindset while filming, it was interesting too. So lots of good stuff. And I'm sure we'll get like plenty more of interviews with her and the rest of the cast as the series finale approaches in a couple
certainly.
Weeks. So
certainly.
Yeah, sad times. we'll get to the format of the episode. We have Jessica leading us into Stargirl, Supergirl. Side B, we have Batwoman and Legends. Take it away, Jessica.
Okay, so over on side A, we have calling reinforcements / true partner. And we start with Stargirl, basically with the looming threat of Eclipso hanging over their heads. Courtney seeks help from the unlikeliest of places. So basically, you know, she's low on teammates right now. So Cindy is starting to look really good. and she's trying to like, everyone's trying to like rally the forces. She makes one more attempt to speak to Yolanda and get her back. And Pat goes to talk to Rick, Rick's uncle, to see if he can release him from jail so he can come back as well. Courtney's initial conversation with Yolanda does not go very well, because even though Yolanda now knows that she's not the first killer, she has inherited the killing genes from the previous Wildcat predecessor. So she's really, that's really not any kind of, you know,
consolation.
Yes, consolation or comfort to her. Pat's initial discussion with Rick's uncle also does not go well, because please don't mess up this young white boy's life. Did not land with Rick's uncle the way that he probably assumed it would. And then, you know, he needed to get a little bit more persuasive behind a locked door and closed blinds. He's eventually able to get Rick out of jail. And Cindy, seeing that Courtney's conversation with Yolanda didn't go as well, tries a different tactic of reverse psychology and taunts her, telling her that she's Courtney's new best friend and we don't need you, which makes Yolanda angry enough to actually come back to the fold, the Whitmore Dugan house, and ask Courtney if she was okay, because like, why would you do this? Meanwhile, Mike is also doing his part to recruit the troops, and he goes to search find Thunderbolt, which leads him straight to his friend Jakeem. And eventually Mike comes to an agreement with Jakeem to have him help save the world, but only after they do the dishes. Everybody, meanwhile, Beth and Jenny go to the school where they last saw remnants of the Shade and Eclipso. And Jenny is actually overtaken by a little piece of Shadowland and sees a vision of that Eclipso shows her of the finale of friends being lying passed out or dead on the ground and Courtney being corrupted by a dark force. And that is what we are leading up to going into the finale. Greg Beeman directed the episode, written by James Dale Robinson. What sparked joy?
Well, I did love that we finally got a real meeting between Beth and Dr. Midnight. And Dr. Midnight,
I forgot that.
Dr. Midnight thinks that Beth is the best. She has the seal of approval. And he was like, I believe in Beth. She's great. She's a hero. She can do it. Love that. I guess I'm glad that Pat finally did something about Rick. And, you know, glad he called Matt out on being the worst fake dad ever. And, you know, he had to do something. So whatever's going on behind closed doors and blinds, it worked. So thanks, Pat, for doing that many episodes late. I also did like Cindy using reverse psychology on Yolanda to have her rejoin the JSA. I guess it was very Cindy of her, right? At least we're seeing her use her manipulative tactics or her, you know, whatever, underhanded tactics for the winning team this time around, better than when she was making the attempt with the ISA. Mike and Jakeem, I love it. I'm glad that Jakeem has a Thunderbolt and he is back in our lives. I loved when Mike was like, have you heard of the Justice Society of America? And Jakeem was like, is that like the Boy Scouts? Because I'm bad at tying knots. And yeah, so finally we're going to have like a widened JSA for next episode, which is like the last episode. But overall, it was like a little lighthearted, or at least somewhat more lighthearted than the last couple episodes have been, break before a big blowout. And that is all I have to say.
Beautiful. yeah, I like much of the same thing. I think what really struck me about this episode is that, other than it being, you know, we're going to chill here until we have to really fight Eclipso, but that allows for some character building, some fun character dynamics. We finally get Jakeem, actually. Like, we saw him for like a few seconds several episodes ago, and the show finally remembered that he exists. And I like that, you know, we still see a little bit of like, Mike's like, well, Thunderbolt's mine. Oh, I'm possessive of it. But Jakeem is just like, no, you know, like seeing him and his personality and his vibe is like, no, he definitely deserves it. So I really like that. But I also like them bonding because it was super sweet. I do think Mike needs friends and not just having to rely on Courtney's group of people, like friends his own age. And I think that building that with Jakeem is really interesting and fun to see, especially since, like, you know, the whole, we have to save the world. They're like, but you got to do the dishes first. Like, that's really crucial because it's an everyday thing and just can't leave them behind.
I'm surprised so that they didn't have Thunderbolt do the dishes.
I know. And just like that dynamic was really fun. And then seeing, of course, Beth and Dr. Midnight bond, like it's, you know, finally getting to meet someone you've been, it's sort of like meeting an online friend.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, this is you in real
life.
We
can relate.
You're like, this is so cool. We're great. You know, we get along really well. And so I really like them working together to kind of figure out what's going on with Eclipso and finding information and tracking him together with their goggles. I think that was a really nice kind of culmination of Beth's arc, too, and her relationship with him throughout. And then, of course, like just seeing Yolanda again. It's been so long since we really got her on screen since she left. And, you know, seeing her and Courtney and how much Courtney even misses her, like her best friend, but also having Cindy step in and know that they need Yolanda on the team. And, you know, even seeing hints of like Cindy wanting to, I don't know, like you get a sense of like her really liking Courtney's mom because, she, you know, what happened with her mother. She's like, this sandwich is really great. And little things like that. So that was really fun. And I don't know. I don't know if I would call this a joy or even a not joy, but like Pat's like shutting the curtains to like have a talking to or whatever he was going to do with Rick's uncle. I was like, I'm a little bit disturbed, but this is probably the best we've seen Luke Wilson do in quite a few episodes. So that was really nice. And finally just having someone remember that Rick was, yes, in jail and someone needs to get him out. So yeah, I think that the episode itself was like a bit on the slow side, but it really kind of built the intensity of like what these characters were going to be up against soon. And then even learning about, you know, like Courtney is the key and all that was really interesting. I think gives a lot more oomph to what's going to happen because, you know, Cindy keeps telling her like, you have to tap into your dark side. But Cindy's like, I'm so good. I need to stay good. But just like having all of those characters now on one side, it's going to be interesting. And I really liked seeing the build up towards that.
Yeah, I like actually like the build up of this episode, like calling in the troops and having everyone kind of go on their little missions to like recruit. It felt like we were building up to the final battle, which I liked. I also like the opening scene in this episode with we think it's going to be something like creepy because you get all these like still shots of nothing going on. And then there's like Buddy the Bulldog is just like having like his living his best life home alone with Cosmo. I thought that was like a great, nice way to kind of like break the tension of, you know, the really intense like previous episodes to, you know, Buddy and Cosmo's home adventures. So I thought that was cute. I also loved that Beth's first meeting with Dr. Midnight went so well because, you know, her first initial relationship with him is an AI version of him that, you know, that she had built up this rapport. And now she, in this season, she met the real version of him and it's kind of like having to start from zero because she and Chuck, the AI, had a great relationship. And then now you have the real Dr. Midnight. He's like, who is this? Why do you have my goggles on? You know, and trying to like build that rapport with him. So her finally getting to meet him in real life. And then the fact that they gelled so quickly together about, you know, these are my cool indoor glasses. And, you know, it'll take 8 hours to analyze a sample, but if we do it together, it'll take 4. Let's link up. And she's like, oh, and you can call me Chuck. Like, you know, meeting her BFF IRL. And it's just like as positive of an experience as it was before. So I thought that was really, really sweet. Also, I like that he has never met her before in real life. And still, he has so much belief in her. Like when Pat was like, I don't know if these kids can do it. It was like, I know Beth Chappell can. So, yes, you better stand. Yes, love that. Yes, stand your protege. So, I think, and I also think it goes back to, like, when she was being taunted by Eclipso about, you don't belong here, no one chose you. This is clearly showing that, you know, Dr. Midnight is choosing her. So that's also, like, a nice little, like, reinforcement of this is Beth's destiny, that Beth belongs kind of thing. So that's really nice. I love the Courtney-Yolanda-Cindy dynamic, because I think it's, like, really interesting. You know, when we were talking about Shades of Grey in the previous episode of Shadowlands, like, Cindy doesn't believe that, you know, she's had to make certain choices. She's pretty dark, like, on the sliding scale of lightness to darkness, she's way at the end and Courtney's way at the other end of the light. But, you know, she's not bad because she chose to be. She's bad because of the hand that she's been dealt in life, kind of thing. And I feel like it seems like sometimes, like, for example, with Barbara and the sandwich or whatever, that she, this is the life that she could have had, or it could have been, like, another option. I feel like she sees, like, little pockets of windows of that. And one of those may have been, like, Courtney's relationship with Yolanda and seeing how much, you know, even though that she's butted heads personally with Courtney, she still can recognize and understand the value of, like, friendship and seeing it. And, you know, the fact that she went after Yolanda after Courtney kind of failed and, you know, deliberately taunted her to bring her back to the team, I thought was, you know, a good gray side of Cindy, you know, being doing something helpful, but not necessarily in the most, like, lighthearted kind of way or whatever. So I like that there's, and I like that Yolanda was jealous and, like, slash overprotective of Courtney and wanting to protect Courtney's light from Cindy's darkness. So I think that's just, like, a really interesting little dynamic. And then also I just liked that we finally got to see Jakeem, that big hamburger. I don't know what he's doing with Thunderbolt. What he's been doing. His wishes have been kind of all over the place. It kind of reminded me of, like, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs with that, like, giant ass hamburger.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It was the one time in the show I was like, yeah, that's fake.
Right. but I also like, you know,
didn't believe in the hamburger.
It was kind of like just Mike's interactions, like you said, with someone his own age. You know, I thought he was, like, kind of bold to be like, give me the pin back. I was like, there's no takesy paxies, you know, in Thunderbolt gift giving. Like, you gave it away. but I also like how he kind of talked himself out of being worthy of the pin. He's like, I wanted to go to, I said, I wish it could have gone to someone better. And the fact that he thought of Jakeem, so it's not just Thunderbolt just, like, finding Jakeem randomly. When Mike was thinking in his head, he had the thought of Jakeem. And then him talking through that, those reasonings, like, well, you are better at organizing and people do like you better because you have better customer service, you know, like, all of these things. So I thought it was, like, rude. He tried to say, give it back. But then he kind of, like, talked himself out of, like, the reasons why it was supposed to be Jakeem anyway. So I thought it was hilarious that they had to do the dishes before they go save the world. So I thought that was really cute. What did not spark joy?
While I did like the building back of the team, which felt like a good, you know, build up for a showdown, I feel like I would have liked maybe, like, more episodes leading to it. Like, maybe bringing one person back and finding one person per episode. Instead, it was like, we found Green Lantern and then nothing else happened for several episodes before and after. And now we're bringing everyone back and also getting Jakeem in one episode. So stretching that out a little bit would have been better for me. Also a little bit sad that Courtney's pep talk did not work on Yolanda. I'm glad we got to see Cindy's. But when Courtney was like, oh my god, you weren't the first killer, someone else did it. And Yolanda was like, that is even worse. You are terrible at this, Courtney. I was like, why? What is going to work? But obviously Cindy's, I guess, was a more effective. Eclipso being able to infect the power ring is sad times, not really like a no joy, but like a no joy in the story. So yeah, overall, I just feel like the show the season has been a little bit like lots of episodes where they can't, I don't know if they can't afford for a lot to happen or if they just didn't stretch it out so that the same amount happens in every episode. But yeah, so I feel like half the episode is kind of like, we're chilling here, and the other half it's like, oh, showdown time. So there you go. And also I agree with what Jessica will say about Pat. A very mysterious man. What does it mean?
Yeah. I think that Courtney's conversation with her mom about what she saw in the Shadowlands could have been a little bit more. Because I feel like they wrapped that up pretty quickly.
I totally forgot about that. Like, okay. Because it was just like, so you like me. Yeah, I like that you're my daughter. Okay.
And I think it would have been interesting, especially since we still have that, you know, I know that Storm is not her father, obviously, but like we still have that little plot thread hanging. And having a little bit more, I think talking a little bit more about it would have given us more of Barbara's perspective, because, you know, it is hard out there. And I think that it could have just been...
Oh, single ladies.
Yeah. It just could have had a little bit more, rather than just be like, no, it was a very cliched response, I guess. And that's fine. I know that Barbara loves her daughter, but also, like, I would rather see Barbara as more than just a mom, if that makes sense, you know? Mm-hmm. So they could have done a little bit more with that scene. And also, Pat's scene with, I don't even know what Rick's uncle's name is, but doesn't with Rick's matter. Uncle. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Took a turn. And I feel like it was interesting because, like, we'd never really seen Pat do these things with other people. Like, we've seen him be kind of bullied by the other JSA members. Mm-hmm. And he's just like this kindly person who's always trying to help or whatever. And I feel like up until that scene, I'd forgotten he was in the army. And I'm like, oh, what is happening here? Is he going to go like full torture tactic on him? I don't know. It was really creepy. And I'm just concerned. And that's all.
Yeah, I'll start there too, because I was just confused. Like, on Twitter, I was just like, what is happening right now? The thing that gets me is it's such a contrast to the JSA doesn't kill and like all of this like high pedestal kind of stuff that he was, you know, on his like, oh, I don't want to tell Courtney that they killed a man. Like, we don't do that. We're not those kind of people. But yet, you are the kind of person that threatens an invalid in the hospital. Like, I don't understand how that's the same person. Like, I'm not mad at it because Rick's uncle is obviously an asshole. But I just think that it's confusing that Pat is, you know, very peace protector, you know, do no harm, but then also I will do other things behind closed blinds and closed doors. Like, I don't know, it's like a dual thing, because it was like you said, it was like one of the best things that Luke Wilson has gotten to do acting wise, but it's also seems out of character for Pat to do. And I'm also just, I guess I wonder, like, okay, so he's in jail. He's got charges pressed against him because of Rick's uncle. Fine. But did he not have bail? Like, could you not, like, bail him out sooner or something? So I was, like, still wondering, like, why he was in jail for so long. Well, you got money for a giant robot in your garage.
That's true. Fair points.
So, you know, I thought that was just kind of, you know, I was confused. I was confused that Pat having bad at him too when he was just so, you know, light only.
Wholesome.
When it came to like the JSA killing Bruce Gordon. And then like the other, I generally enjoy this episode, but the other kind of thing, like that was confusing, but the other thing that I was really kind of like, I don't want this. And I think the finale will prove me out of why I don't want this, but Cindy pushing Courtney to find her darkness in order to defeat Eclipso. We got like a preview of that when they were in the Shadowlands, of Cindy being upset that Courtney is all light and no darkness. And, you know, you don't break or you won't even bend. And then again, in this episode, she used Yolanda's darkness to bring her back to the team. And she's like, we need darkness. You need evil to fight evil. And I'm just like, using evil to fight evil was how you broke up the JSA the first time with the whole killing Bruce Gordon thing. And I don't feel like, I feel this way, whether it's light or gray or dark or whatever, but I feel like characters should not be forced to go out of what they are. If you are light, let her be the lightness. Like, don't make her go dark to make her edgy, to make her a better hero. That's just stupid.
Right.
And on the flip side, if you are dark or in the shades of gray, like the Shade or like Cindy, don't force them to go be in the light and only be in the light. And, you know, they have failed if they backslid into the darkness or whatever.
They should be comfortable being who they are.
Yes. Have them stay in their lanes. If you have someone that's like all the light, then that's, you know, let them be them. And because you need people like that. And you also need people that can bend and can, you know, go in different directions or straddle the line or even do the things that you don't want to do. Like, that's what you need, all those kind of people on your team. I don't like the fact that she's being advised to move into the darkness. And then we'll see in the finale, that's exactly what Eclipso wants her to do. So he can.
Exactly. Make her so her the new finale, home. They'll prove she needs to be even lighter.
Exactly. So I think the finale will prove me right. I just don't like the setup of it. but what did Sonya have to say about Stargirl? Because I know she gave us some feedback.
Yes, she did. As soon as I can unlock my phone. Sonya says, we finally have Yolanda and Rick back. Jenny's here and Jakima's on screen. I never thought this day would come. The opening scene was so funny with the dog having the time of his life, being home alone, and the staff flying around and whatnot. Super cute. Did anyone else laugh when Cindy was picking up the sandwich Barbara gave her and was like, oh my God, this is delicious. Thank you. God, Rick's uncle is a douchebag. Like, yes, your nephew beat you up and whatnot, but Pat was right. His sister and brother-in-law were counting on him to take care of Rick, and he didn't. He definitely abused him. I also like how Pat brought up how Rick's uncle harassed waitresses, because I remember those scenes from season one, and they always made me so mad. What is this darkness Pat is talking about, and what did he do to Rick's uncle? Because clearly he did something, since Rick is out of jail and the charges were dropped. Like, doesn't this go against everything we know about Pat? Exactly.
Thank you.
Is anyone else reminded of that movie Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs? Yes. Also, let me just laugh at the fact that Thunderbolt took the Chinese food wish so literally that he actually went to China. I love how easily Jakima
authentic
to help help the team, and the scene where Mike is helping his family wash dishes was hilarious. I honestly thought that Courtney telling Yolanda that the JSA had killed someone before would have given Yolanda comfort, knowing she's not the first JSA member to take a life, but it just made Yolanda talk about how the Wildcat costume was worn by two murderers. Totally backfired. There's something in that costume, man. Great that Cindy went to talk to her and basically goaded her into coming back. Super smart of Cindy, and more depth we've seen from her in a while. I also love the Dr. McKnighter and Beth scenes. He really trusts her and knows she's capable, unlike the rest of the JSA, and I'm so glad she has a mentor who believes in her. Yay for Beth, the best JSA member. Jenny's creepy dream with Eclipso, Courtney, and everyone else being dead. Yikes. I'm excited to see the next episode, though. Thank you so much for your feedback, Sonya.
Was she your only Stargirl feedback?
I believe so.
We are okay. Unloved.
Predictions. Will Eclipso succeed?
No.
No. The power of light and love.
Exactly. I'm sure that Courtney will maybe slide into darkness a little bit, and then that will be like the opposite of what we need, and then, you know. Their Cosmo will glow brighter than ever, and her light will shine. And
I feel like all her teammates are going to be like, Courtney, this is
come to the light.
Yeah,
exactly.
Follow
exactly.
The light, Courtney.
Exactly. So, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to have to come, like, you know, from within. The power has to come from within for Courtney to be so full of light that, you know, Eclipso is like a cockroach and he must escape.
Exactly. And then I think that they'll all graduate summer school without ever having gone to summer school.
Right. Yes. Oh, you know what? And I think because at the end, Cindy makes a phone call that it seems like it's supposed to be a little suspicious, but I know she's just calling like more reinforcements. I feel like Artemis is coming back. finale. I think Isaac's dead. So I don't, she mentioned like a couple people or like y'all, or she said something plural.
Maybe Cameron will randomly show up with his ice powers that we have not seen him use.
Is Flash still alive? Because I wonder if they would just call like everybody. I don't know.
I mean, Sydney's not calling Jay Garrick. But I do wonder if, since Artemis fled and we have not seen her since, if she broke her parents out of jail or if her parents broke out of jail because they heard about...
She was missing.
Yeah. So I'm thinking that it'll be Artemis and her parents come. Yeah. So then can we have like a full circle moment from when they broke out of jail the first time?
Yeah.
Okay. So... In over on Supergirl, love, I believe in a thing called love, just listen to the heart. That's the name of the episode, actually. I believe in a thing called love. And it's about when Lex Luthor appears by Nixley's side. She is so unimpressed by him. And when he tells her in the future that they are in love, she is even less impressed. He says that they're friends, quote unquote. But he also lets slip that he's the one that sent Supergirl into the Phantom Zone in the first place, and that really pisses her off. So Lex does not have the romantic reunion that he was expecting, and he has to earn Nixley's affection back this episode. And one way to do that is helping her to find the love totem. Supergirl and the team must deal with the emotional fallout of facing two of their biggest foes at the same time, knowing that Lex is now protecting and working with Nixley. Meanwhile, Alex is making plans for the perfect proposal to Kelly. It does not go initially as planned, because Al's bar, where she wanted to propose to Kelly, where she first realized she loved her, has been booked for that night. But what she does not realize is that Kelly also had the same exact idea that she did, making for a very beautiful proposal, and it was so beautiful that it brought the love totem all the way from Portugal to Alex's back pocket, because the love totem says gay rights and that believes in Alex and Kelly's love. Nixley and Lex show up to steal the totem, but they are confronted with John and Kara, who use the totems as on themselves as weapons to fight back. John faces the courage totem and faces the moment that he lacked courage when he did not fight to save his daughters from the white Martians on Mars, and actually winds up destroying the love totem to keep it away from Lex. But what we learned from Lex is that totems cannot be destroyed. They just come back in different forms. Lex found the Hope Totem. How he inspired hope in someone, I have no idea how he got that. But the Love Totem reincarnates itself within Alex and Kelly's bundle of love, their child Esme, which is very sweet, but also very foreboding.
Yeah, I was concerned.
Yeah, a little bit concerning. Meanwhile, Andrea has a bone to pick with the fact that Lex is somehow back, and she wants to nail him at all costs. And William is like, journalists have morals and ethics that they should not cross. And Andrea said, yeah,
whatever. She's like, journalism, what's that?
And she goes and finds Lex's notes. This episode was written by Jesse Warren directed by Jesse Warren and written by Dana Horgan and Nikki Holcomb. What brought joy?
Well, I was very joyful at the fact that Nixley was super mad at Lex for sending Kara to the Phantom Zone, which was like, oh, you're just like all the men that send women to the Phantom Zone. Hashtag feminism. And I support Nixley in that. Also, I really loved the entire Alex and Kelly and Esme plotline, but, you know, from Alex showing up the ring, being all excited for a proposal plan, and, like, Esme being, like, her little, like, sidekick there, right? And, like, when they were talking to Al, the bartender, all of that was super, super cute. And then that it was, like, I guess Esme was, like, a double agent and also knew about Kelly. She was like playing her mom's like crazy. Anyway, the whole thing was adorable. I loved when Alex was like, no, I'm going to propose. And then she pulled it out and it was the love totem. She's like, wait a second. Okay. Yeah. All great. Definitely love how they're handling the OTP as we bring the show to a close. Also, this is probably the most I've ever liked Otis. I don't know. I thought he was fun.
Just kinda, I like, forgot commenting. That was his name.
Yeah. Commenting on Lex's true love. Kind of like making fun of him and then also just like being annoying in general. But I did love how Lex was just so like at a loss, right? Like, why doesn't Nixley just love me now? Like, I just came and been like, hey, let's be friends. And so like when he kept like pissing her off more and more, and then she like whooshed off after he rescued her. And then he's just like saying, I love you to the air as she leaves. Right. That was funny. Also mm-hmm. like, that Nia was asking Brainy to like, you know, peek into the future, right? And he's like, oh no, I'm scared because of that one time, that horrible storyline that I have forgotten where I was doing shit for Lex. But I'm glad that they're actually kind of talking about that, because I feel like from the beginning with Nia and Brainy, people have always been like, but in the future, somehow they can't be together because the future. And I don't remember what the reasons were. But they
stop
always
calling me out, Tati.
I'm not you. Everyone was doing it. But anyway, so now I'm glad that they're actually handling like whatever the future is in and what it might mean to utilize one's ability to know about it in a responsible way. So that's good. John reliving the loss of his daughters with the courage totem, good and sad, not joyful, but you know, I'm glad that they're still utilizing that storyline for him as we come to close. Also love William being part of the Alex Kelly proposal story. And like being like, no, you have to go now. Go to the bar now. For reasons. And then the ending with like all these like cliffhangers. I feel like I haven't seen cliffhangers or like cool door openings to more stories at the end of a Supergirl episode in a long time. So like Otis meeting William about Lex. What does it mean? I love Andrea playing Akrata again and getting the info from Lex because, like you said, journalists have ethics. But do business owners? Do CEOs? No, and that is what Andrea is, so I support it. And then, you know, Esme now being a love totem is very interesting and exciting, and we will look forward to knowing what it means.
I agree with all the Alex Kelly stuff, because that was just super cute, super adorable. They own my heart. I love that. I just love the little things, right? Like, you know, Kara and John getting excited about it. They're like, oh my God, they're all squeeing together. And then also the just seeing the bar again, because I forgot for a long time that that's where they used to go to drink and also do karaoke and stuff, which was very nice to have that as be their place. And just, you know, both proposals were nice. The fact that they were going to both propose to each other on the exact same day, at the exact same time, they both realized they loved each other. It was all just really well done and just heartwarming. And I love that Esme's involved too. And even like William, because I feel like this season has done the best job of incorporating William into the storyline and also like with the super friends and actually making it feel like he is their friend. You know, he's been pep talking so them. He's supporting them.
It's so funny that he knows everybody's business except their alter egos.
That is funny, but I do love that. I mean, I feel like he's getting closer. You know, eventually he will find out. We have three more episodes left, so, you know, within that time frame. But I just love that for William, because I feel like he was just ignored for so long, and now he's finally getting to do some stuff and also have friendships and also be the like the one true journalist who has ethics on the show. So, that, you know, great for him. But yeah, the proposal stuff was just beautiful, and I really like how they did all that stuff. Lex just... It's not a joy that he loves Nixley, but just like making me actually laugh at a Supergirl episode in quite a long time. He was just so ridiculous and over the top. And, you know, like one of those guys who's like, but I love you. And I've never felt this way. I'm so consumed. he was doing too much, but I got a good laugh out of watching him do too much. And I love Nixley just being like, ew, you're a creep. I don't even know you. How do you love me? Like, where is this coming from? was also great because that it was the accurate reaction that she should have had. it's like creepy stalker vibes over here. Otis, you know, just being someone who for some reason is still on Lex's payroll, like the fact that he survived this long is, you know, amazing. And also that he might be double crossing Lex is also amazing. Because he was, you could tell he's like super creeped out the fact that Lex is just so in love. And he's like, no, we don't do that here. We're bad guys. Wait, no. We don't fall in love. and just like Jean having a moment to be able to, yeah, seeing the memory of losing his daughters was sad and terrible, but also like being able to sort of change that and like what would have done, but also finding in him to like, I know what I did wrong before, and now I'm not going to do that again with my new family. And I really liked how he kind of came full circle with that. So yeah, all the relationship stuff was excellent in this episode.
Yeah, I think with John going through the courage totem, I like that he's the one that took it, and that we got to see the moment that he lacked courage, and we got to see for him being able to rectify that, because it's something that he's held on to for so long. And then he said, you know, this has happened to my daughters in the past, and then seeing you or Alex in danger, I've kind of felt that same fear all over again, and not being able to do anything to like help you. And so it was interesting to see him go through this and do the right thing that he felt that he should have done. But it was also interesting that it didn't change anything. So now he's not filled with regret, because, you know, if only I had done this, then my daughters would still be alive. But right, we saw right. in the thing, hold on 1 second. We saw in the dream that he still fought, but still lost them. So I thought it was interesting that they said coming out of that the courage totem wasn't just the act of courage, but just like the losing the fear of, I forgot what they said about it, but like not being afraid of what's going to happen if you do something. I butchered whatever that lesson was, but I thought it was very, I thought it was very interesting, and it kind of changed like Kara's perspective of, you know, knowing that this is scary, but doing it anyway, kind of thing. Because I feel like I don't know what it means that Kara keeps failing her courage totem. I still don't know what that part means, but I think we learn a little bit more about what that totem is trying to teach, which I don't think was present in the first time that we saw it. So that was interesting.
Definitely.
And then, you know, the proposal was, that whole storyline was like really, really nice. And just to see Alex like really excited about proposing, also her nerves about proposing, because the last time she just did it on a whim with Maggie, and that did not go as well. So her wanting to get things right, I thought it was like funny when she went over there. She just assumed that Al's place is going to be like open and so that she could like go in and decorate. She's like, no, we have her reservations
at,
here.
Her shock at there being a reservation. I was like, right, like
who makes a reservation to propose to their girlfriend and decorate your entire bar? Like, I don't know. But I thought it was cute that, you know, Ezra like, don't you believe in love, Al? I'm like, Al, how can you how can you say no to that? And we find out it's because he had already said yes to that before with Kelly. And I also think it's interesting that William is either a very good liar, or they forget that he talked to Kelly or didn't talk to Alex, because he was talking to Kelly like, why don't you just go ahead and propose? But then he also helped Kelly get the reservation for Al. So I'm like, you know, William, sneaky, sneaky bastard. I liked that Nixley was so grossed out by Lex, because like you said, I think that's the appropriate reaction. And I agree that it was like funny, like his confusion, because he's like very narcissistic and like, how could she not love me? I did all this stuff for her. And I like that she was, because I feel like when we hear that Lex is in love with Nick Slayer, that they're going to be, you know, a thing. And you're like, you know, does she fall in love with him because he's so bad and he does all this stuff for her? And that's going to be kind of gross to see. And I don't want that. So I like that it wasn't that. I like that it was that he expected that. Like, we expected what he expected. And then the fact that it wasn't that made it even better. I like that. There's one line, I think Otis said it, where he's talking about, you know, but you love toxic relationships.
Oh, yeah. He was like, that was the old meme.
Yeah. So I was worried having them parallel Danvers in like the same episode. I'm like, please God, don't let this love totem be convinced by by Lex's love for Nick Slee, because that just would not be it. But I liked the fact that, and you can kind of almost feel the sincerity, which is weird. I feel like there's still like another shoe that has to drop or whatever. But I liked that Nick Slee held out for so long. I'm like, come on. He's still creepy. Very, very creepy. Let's hold on to that. But overall, I thought it was like a really fun episode. And I also like that Lena, she and Brainy, because she and Brainy always like parallel their emotions when it has to involve Lex. So when he comes back into the picture, and that kind of gives Lena a faltering confidence, but she kind of realizes that, through her conversation with Kara, that he truly doesn't have any more control over her. And I thought that was a very powerful moment for her to be able to use, like, her love. Because I like that Kara was saying that, you know, for so long, Lex was your only family. And he's, like, a toxic individual. But now we're your family. And you have people that love you. And you can use that instead of using your rage for Lex. And so I thought that conversation was really, really good. And then Brainy also similarly having a similar thing with Lex, that, you know, he was kind of used and abused by Lex, and that being tied to the future and the mistakes that he's made. I like that Nia, we actually see her dreaming, because before they're saying, oh, she's off dreaming and we just never see her. So I like that she was present in the episode. And I also like that, you know, she was there to support Brainy and be like, you know, we're at the point where we need that future help. So I thought they had like another good conversation too. Now that we've talked about everything that we liked, what are things that did not spark joy?
Well, I thought it was one of the stronger episodes of the season for sure. So there's much fewer things that did not spark joy. But one thing is, like, everyone was like, oh my god, Kara, you quit. And then they're like, okay, I guess you quit. And then they just moved on. And I was like, why? Like, why didn't we just not have that storyline and then just focus this episode on not that? And then, even though I agree with everything you said about the love part of the equation for Lena and Luther, Lena and Lex, I feel like the magic part is still just like, but why does it have to be magic? Like,
right.
It's early on in the, you know, when she was like, I'm not going to use magic against Lex because my emotions. And then Kara's like, good, because you're so much more than your magic. It's cool. And I was like, yeah, we know. So, like, why don't we just not have her be doing magic? Like, she could have come up with, like, a totem replica from science, right? Like, because it's all fake science anyway. So, like, why not make it be that she does it with her brain and not with her spells? I don't know. So I just still think that that's just, like, such a random addition that's, like, not really that necessary. Aside from that, I just still, you know, the totems are just still not doing it for me. I like the love totem for the sake of Alex and Kelly's side of the equation. But still, like, oh, and then we brought the courage totem back, and now the totems can turn into other things. And now more things will happen with totems. Like, please stop with the totems. Especially because I don't know what Lex and Nixie are going to do other than be scary. Like, they're working together. This is the worst thing that's ever happened. It's going to be the most difficult villain we've ever had to face, but we do not have the budget to show you why that would be the case. So just believe. Just believe that it is terrible. I'm like, I guess I believe. I clap if I believe. So there you go. That's all.
Yeah, they believe in this plot, like, they try to believe in Lena's magic, and I don't know how that's working out for them. But I agree about the totem stuff. I like completely zone out when that stuff comes on. I'm like, I don't know, I don't care, I don't know what's going on, and I don't think anybody really does, because I've seen so many people on Twitter be like, I don't know what the fuck is happening with this totem stuff, but it exists. And I just feel like it continues to just derail the personal story. Although this one actually tied in with the personal story, and so did the dreamer stuff, which is crucial, but like everything else, like previously with the courage totem with Kara, I'm like, I don't really think that it did anything for her. So I feel like it's just a bunch of missed opportunities in general. And again, like, this is the final season. I don't feel like with there like 3 episodes left. I was like, I guess we're just gonna, you know, we'll see what happens. But I mean, I definitely feel like reintroducing Lex brought something, some spark back, because it's like, Lex Luthor is the worst. I'm like, okay, finally, you know, some movement. But I also don't really buy Lex's love for Nixley, because I feel like,
right,
you know, to quote my sister, she's like, he's a terrible villain. Like, are we supposed to believe that he's head over heels in love? And I was like, no, we're not. So I feel like, yeah, exactly. It happened off screen.
And I also feel like him future storyline genuinely love would like bite into his, like, he wouldn't be as villainous.
Yeah, like him be, like you said, being genuinely in love, it's disingenuous to his character.
Right.
So that doesn't really work. And I don't think it has the same effect that the writers want it to have. And also, I'm confused by all the future storyline stuff. Like, how did he end up in the future? I know they're going to answer it, but I also don't care. I
don't remember how he got out of jail. Like,
yeah.
No,
right?
Because he was out of jail.
He was set free because they let him go.
There was a mistrial. And then, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, so it's just like a lot going on about that. Like,
yeah.
I don't know, just whatever. So yeah, it's just a lot of like the plot itself, and even like with Nixley's plot, because I feel like, again, they could have tied it more with Kara, but I feel like they've just really dropped the ball on, they've lost the plot with Nixley, honestly. Like, I don't know, I can't remember why she wants the totems even, like,
vengeance.
Vengeance, take over Earth, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The same thing we always do, brain error, Pinky. Now this is like Lex.
Yeah, saying that reminds me, like, we're I don't know how many episodes we have left. Like, what is
3.
It? 2, 3? Okay. But, like, we're coming to the end here, and I'm still like, I don't have much to say about Kara. And I feel like that in and of itself
that's
is
a problem.
A problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, there you go. You're like, that sums it up.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Like, the fact that we are coming towards the end and we don't really have any personal story with Kara. And then I found what they're saying about the courage totem between him and John and Kara, that we're stronger than our fears. That was supposed to be like the lesson that you learn. But going back to Kara failing her test, what was she supposed to be strong? Like, I still don't get why she failed her test and what her lesson was supposed to be, you know, that she's stronger than her fears. Unless it goes back to, like, you know, I think Sean predicted, one of his predictions, like, from earlier, was that she would have to, either Sean or Suara, one of them, or that she had to reveal to the world that she was Supergirl. Because I guess that would be a fear, that if people knew that she was Supergirl, then that means that all of her friends and family are in danger or whatever. But I don't know. I don't really know that we've seen that. And I feel like, I do like that they were more proactive in this episode. But yeah, there's, for a final season, Lena having magic is still like kind of weird. The fact that we don't really have a theme for Kara, I think, is kind of weird. Lex just, him being so like narcissistic and expecting, I was half expecting him, like, because Otis, I think at one point was like, why don't you just brainwash her? And like, that wouldn't be what I'd be expecting Lex to do, to be honest. Like, him doing all this stuff, like manipulating things around to make it seem to help her without her knowing that he's helping her, is like just very like creepy. So I was like, I like that Nixley was not impressed by that, but it also is still kind of, you know, Lex is just kind of cringy. You know, this was one of my, not my favorite, but my, I liked it better than others. It was entertaining. But I agree with, like, the totems. You can't get rid of them. They're always going to be there. And I don't like the fact... I like the fact that it chose Esme in the sense that she represents the true love between Allie and Kellex. Kelly and Alex. But I also am worried because love totem shields or whatever, things that you find the love totem in, that's not, it's like the covering of the totem, you know, it's not like the actual totem. So, and we know that they want to get all of them. And so if it's in Esme and they try to take it out of her, what is that going to do to her? I don't know. So it's kind of, it's a little bit kind of scary that it's in her. So that's weird. What did Shang and Suara and Sonya have to say?
I had many thoughts. Sonya says, this episode was super weird with the Lex being in love with Nixley. Like, what? But I love the dancing part of it. Nixley being all, I hate men who send women to the Phantom Zone. Like, even though she hates cars, she's like, I got your back, girl.
Right.
All at the fact that Alex knew she loved Kelly when they both had the same favorite movie villain. And I can't believe Al's is booked. And also Esme being all, don't you believe in love, to Al was adorable and hilarious at the same time. Like, way to put the guy on the spot. Super smart of Lena to use magic to fool Nixley into thinking some random object was a totem. But seriously, it was like 7 against 1. And they never really got the upper hand on her until Jean basically used all the full brunt of his powers. Everything else was like, oh my god, they took her down. Yay. Only to see her land on her feet and be fine. Lena's magic going out of control when Lex got there. Yikes. And now Lex knows she has magic, so there's that upper hand. Again, with Lena also using science to help the team. Like, why did they give her magic in the first place? It's so out of place this season. Love the fact that William brought up Andrea jumping the gun last time with Lex, and Kat Ko with her biased coverage of the trial and printing something before the final verdict. Like, girl, if you're wondering why no one reads Kat Ko, that's why. Jean passing the courage test was amazing, but I wish we could have seen Kara passing her test instead. Hopefully we get to see that before the series ends, because I want to see what she was supposed to do differently. Kelly and Alex having the same, this is the moment I fell in love with her story. This is the best Supergirl couple ever. Agreed. Lex ditching the totem to save Nixley was insane, and also love how Brainy was like, the fuck, why did he do this? And I'm assuming he's going to go to the 31st century to figure it out. Maybe that's how Wynn and Monel come back for the final episode. Dance and proposal, can't wait for that episode, for the next episode. And interesting to see Andrea use her shadow powers to steal stuff from Lex. Yes. Like, girl, why don't you use your powers to help the super friends and then write about it? Then it would be a win-win.
Why didn't she create, like, her own voice?
Yeah.
You're a superhero. You have a super suit.
That would be kind of shady in the right way. She's like, I'm going to be my own superhero for more media coverage. Yes.
Okay. All right, so Suara says, love was certainly in the air on Supergirl, best part being, of course, the dance and proposal. It was so sweet and wonderful, at least when Lex and Nixley weren't interrupting. Getting to see Alex and Kelly reaffirming what they love about each other was everything, and Esme celebrating her mom's was getting engaged, and everyone involved with the proposal, so good. And then there was Lex and Nixley. I mean, I can honestly see them getting together, but future Lex was a straight up creep. Lexley. Leave her alone. She's not interested. Well, I guess now she kind of is. It was weird to watch. I think John Cryer gave a great performance per usual. Just wish it was better overall. Peter Sargent continues to be great as Nixley and the brainia of it all. John facing his fears and trauma was also a very good moment. Lena continuing to struggle with her magic while having Kara's support remains great to me. And good for William for standing up to Andrea, who continues to absolutely suck. I hate this character so much and wish he were just gone. Glad basically everyone got a moment to shine in this episode. Sea Riders, it is possible. And then Shang says, me looking at every dancing scene. That's perfection. Me when Kara said, you protected me from losing a part of myself. You always do. Yes. And then Lena's like, well, you protected everyone else. Lena is Kara's best protector. Capital D for me. Delicious. Me at any other scenes. It's like hospital food.
Oh, no.
I feel like Brainy is going back into the future, and I don't know if Nia is following him. Interesting. Is that a prediction? I feel like it is. I feel like it's kind of weird. Kara keeps saying Nixley is such a powerful being and they can't stop her without actually really showing Nixley is all that powerful. Kara has defeated Mixie before, so I don't understand why she couldn't perhaps get Nixie to write her name backwards. Like, if they dived into Kara's Phantom Zone PTSD, that mayhaps reduced her fighting abilities due to a mental block and showed more of Nixie's wits, then maybe I could buy it. I would have rather Kara face someone she could win in a fist fight. At least we could see some biceps action, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm so upset we couldn't get the Fatal Five, or Xenon, or Les Lalar, or Lady Styx, or Magog. The world got realigned. Her past enemies would have had a reset too, no? How come the Flash could have throwback villains popping up and not Supergirl? Good point. Like, if they needed to die on the hill of licking Lex's ass, then a team up of perhaps Silver Banshee, Livewire, Roulette, Metallo, trying to gather parts for some big-ass world-killing machine, and then Kara and Super Friends needing to stop them. Big final battle in the finale. Do the writers not have rights to Superboy because of Titans? Lex Luthor tries to make his own Kryptonian, creates Power Girl. I don't know. A rather a simple, straightforward reused plot than whatever this floundering plot is. Good points were made, Chong.
And I would like that if they brought back like past, especially like from season one or whatever. It would have been kind of like an ode to
the
series.
Yeah, for sure.
Instead of this random villain and Lex again. So, you ladies have any predictions?
No. I think that if Brainy went back to the future, Nia would go with him. There you go.
I agree with that.
It's a pretty easy one. I want to know how Lex got to the 31st century and why Wen and Mon-El didn't do shit about it. Because apparently he came back. So what was going on over there, guys?
Yeah, like, shouldn't they have sent a message ahead? Be like, exactly. Oh, hey, heads up.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Moving over into side. Well, do we have, first of all, side A Lady with Gumption nominees for Stargirl and Supergirl?
For Stargirl, I would say Cindy.
Cindy? Okay. Because yeah. Okay. We were here.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to put mine out there, but it better be Cindy.
Yes, I agree with Cindy.
And for Supergirl,
it's a bit, there's a couple options, I guess.
Yeah,
I want to say Kelly and Alex for just having the gumption want to propose to each other at the same time same reason.
Yeah, we already said Esme, right? Esme's already done one.
Esme has won one.
Playing them both the greater good. So I guess Alex and Kelly just as a
honorable mention of maybe Lena, just for breaking the cycle of Lex,
right?
Violence.
The cycle. Yeah.
And a throwaway for Andrea for suiting up again and doing what she thinks needs to be done.
Exactly.
Who?
Andrea. It's like participation award. Or I would say Supergirl in general.
The gumption to break the law.
Exactly. It takes gumption.
Okay, moving over into side B, Factory Reset / Rags to Riches. First up, we have the Legends of Tomorrow. Wavewriter _ error _ 100 _ not found is the name of this episode. It is their 100th episode, and it is focused on Spoon Astra and Gideon trying to leave the safety of Gloria's house to find the Legends before they get to Dr. Davies and die. Astra and Spooner now have human Gideon, who has all of their faculties, try to save the Legends, but they get waylaid by Pi, and to eat the pie versus not to eat the pie causes Gideon to short out, and Astra has to use magic to take her and Spooner inside Gideon's subconscious to figure out what's going on. There they meet Jax, the British version of Jax, who is in Gideon's subconscious. He's her subconscious engineer. And Jax guides Spooner and Astra into Gideon's dreams, where they meet OG Legends, and Gideon relives parts of history on the Wave Rider that cause her to be who she is now in this more complex human form. While in Gideon's subconscious, they realize that Gideon has a virus, and this virus is the factory version of Gideon. who does not want to evolve into a more complex human being because humanity sucks and wants to take Gideon back to being a robot. In this episode, we learn that it actually goes back to Rip Hunter changing Gideon's protocols to have Gideon value protecting the legends over protecting the timeline, and whether that has been for the good or for the bad. Gideon is overwhelmed by all of these human choices and does not know what she should do. But acting together, they come up with a plan to defeat the virus and save Gideon. Meanwhile, the legends are unaware that Bishop that they brought from the past, Bishop that they brought into the future and then to the further past, 1925 from last season, actually took home a souvenir. He stole a copy of Gideon's hard drive, and in his future, he has flashes of his previous time, so they did not erase all of his memories. And he breaks Gideon's code and resets Gideon, that version of Gideon, to his factory settings. And now Bishop is about to send this Gideon on their first mission to defeat the legends of the past and the future and all of that. Katie Lotz got to direct this 100th episode, which I think is really special. And we also got the return of Hawkman, Captain Cold, Ray was back, and Jackson Stein. So we got to see all of those legends back on the ship. It was written, the episode was written by Phil Klemmer and Matthew Mala. What sparked joy?
I liked that we got to have, like, Astra and Spooner as kind of, not like the narrators, but they were the ones that were taking us through time, mostly because they were not present for the majority of those times. So it was a nice way to incorporate the newest members of the team and, like, fully, I don't know, make them part of the family, I guess, if you will. And in general, it was nice to go through and get to see all these old faces, especially Jax just randomly using Franz's British accent, and Gideon being like, that's how I remember him for reasons, or him being like, that's why Gideon, that's how Gideon just remembered me, which was quite funny. I like that it was lampshaded.
I feel like you would, like, if you're thinking about people that you would think about them in your voice, and so that was, like, her voice.
Yeah. I also liked, I love Professor Stein singing show tunes, which also was, like, much like, Friends is British, Professor Stein, you know. Victor Garber is Broadway, so I was like, this makes sense as well. But yeah, I love that we got to see Gideon, like, joining him, and just, like, seeing, like, all these moments where, like, obviously Gideon is not materialized, was not human in those moments, but felt human in interacting with them. So we get to see in the memories them actually being there, even if they were not literally physically present, and they were just, I don't know, singing in the ship. I don't know. Anyway, also I think it was Spooner who said, this is why I skip Christopher Nolan movies, when they're like, the anti-Gideon and the Gideon and this and that. And I was like, yes, correct. Also, I do love, you know, the entire question of whether to nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of a gracious fortune, or to take arms against a sea of troubles and by opposing end them. For some reason, I quoted Hamlet here, and I'm not sure why. I think it was saying, like, whether to give in to becoming human, or in our Gideon's mind, it's whether to, like, evolve into becoming human and accept that versus opposing that if you're anti-Gideon, right? And thinking that is, like, dying, I guess. I guess that's, like, what the internal struggle is. And I was like, this is, like, Hamlet, somehow. I thought that was correct. So, anyway. Also, of course, as usual, the power of love must save the day. So, yeah, I think it was a fun, I'm, like, Bishop is fun, and getting to see Assistant Ava, or, like, an Assistant Ava, is also fun. And then, I guess, seeing how Bishop handles his version of Gideon opens up, you know, obviously a different, more focused journey for this season, and also, I don't know, I guess it's interesting. It's interesting to see where that will go, because it feels like both familiar in terms of how he utilized Ava last season, but also, like, it's a twist on that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
May, what say you?
I say that I did like the, you know, some of the memories that we saw, because I feel like with these types of episodes, you get to see certain things that didn't ever really make it on screen, like new memories for us anyway. And then kind of getting to see it from a different perspective, Gideon's, which was really interesting because we don't really know Gideon, but also kind of having Astra and Spooner see those things as well, because I feel like they're new members. They don't really, I feel like they've been, you know, siloed from the rest of the group, and now they're actually getting to see like these things that happened before them, but knowing that they already knew, like they already knew who Jax was, they already knew Dr. Stein. Like, it's nice to kind of get that confirmation that whoever comes into the group knows the history of the group and also makes their own history in the group. So I'd like seeing, you know, them interact with Gideon, who's been like, I guess, the OG of the OGs. So that was really fun. And just getting to see like Franz with his British accent, which is great, because I'm like, I was confused at first. I was like, wait a second, wasn't he American? And then like, and they explained on the show, I was like, okay, we're back on the same page. But that was great, because I feel like, you know, it was just a clever way to have him using his original accent on the show. And also just getting to see Professor Stein again, and also having like Captain Cold and his little dry sense of humor, and just his dry, like the way that he talks is just so dry, and I love it. But then also just being reminded that there's a lot of testosterone. show. I was like, yes, this is why they added all those women later on. But just seeing that, like, it was just fun times to walk through those certain memories, but also getting to see like Ray in particular, because I really miss Ray, and seeing him again made me realize how much I missed Ray and his energy on the ship. And just like the final shot of even like Gideon kind of realizing her humanity and whatever, and kind of being given the all of the legends' blessing as they all look fondly at her, was really sweet and a very like nice moment. But I think overall that, you know, in general, it was like nice to walk down memory lane a bit, and also realize that like what makes the legends legends is their humanity, and it's not, and especially like because it's Gideon with the AI, it's like not always going to be like we need to not fuck up history, because they've done a lot of that. But the message here is like, you know, they do the best they can with what they have, and sometimes you just got to break the rules, but also it's the little moments that make the team who they are and what they are as a family. And that's just, it was really nice to see, especially like in the moments where they're like, we're on a time ship, we don't get to celebrate all the holidays, we're just going to do all the holidays at once. That was really sweet. So just getting to see all of that was really nice.
Yeah, I like the concept of this episode of looking at the past through Gideon's perspective, because Gideon has been like on a ship, and so Gideon's been a part of the history, but not actually in the history. So seeing different memories from her point of view and how all of those memories have evolved in her. And I agree with you. I like the shot of all the legends welcoming Gideon. And I think Sarah's like, now you're a legend. Like, you're a real legend now. You know, so I thought that was like a great way to kind of put a bow on that whole episode of, you know, you're not just the AI on our ship, you're actually a member of our team. So I thought that was really nice. I agree with Jax, like with a British accent. I was like, what? Like, did Franz forget to what his character was? But I liked, I thought it was a clever way to include that into the story and have him be like the conductor or whatever on this trip down memory lane. I like that each of the memories brought some facet of what Gideon learned from that, that made them evolve into something more human. You get to see different kind of aspects, like, you know, having Ray back or having Victor Stein, you know, singing show tunes, or also I think like I never noticed that, because I never watched season one, because I was just like, no. But especially like Hawkman and his like he is very a lot and very, I guess, bird-like in how he, like, you know, flaps his wings around, or like him and Captain Cold, like, hair trigger will set them off, and they're like, you know, butting heads against each other. I also like in this, it's not only Gideon remembering parts about herself that made her more human and evolved, but also Astra getting to see a different side of Gideon, and not just seeing it as the thing that serves her coffee or feeds her food or whatever. So I like that for them getting to see Gideon. I like that when the virus is introduced and it's like, you know, whoever isn't acting like themselves is probably the virus, but they don't have any idea what these people are like. And seeing that they're all like very hair triggers, it's obviously like very difficult for them to like figure out what's supposed to be real and what's not supposed to be real. I thought it was a good twist that Rip was the one that put in the humanity protocol. So there's like, was this always what Gideon was going to do? Or was Gideon like nature versus nurture kind of thing? Like, what made Gideon Gideon? Was it Rip's code, or was it something else? And I also think that's interesting, the fact that Bishop, I was surprised to see that he was back. And the fact that he has a Gideon now, and now that we have a factory reset Gideon versus this real Gideon, it's going to, you know, have like an interesting thing for like the future. But I also like the virus version of the legends, particularly Avalanche, because all they said is like, babe, babe. And that was literally the only thing, like, babe, babe. You know, like, when different points of Earth, voice of a babe meant something completely different. But it's like, it's like the legends writers were like shading them, and also like, at the same time like standing them. I don't know, it was funny. What did not spark joy?
I assume Tati's. Oh, there you go.
What did not spark? I mean, just in like, even though I feel like it was a good moment for like, oh no, what's gonna happen next? I was so sad when one Gideon showed the other Gideon Rip, you know, like making, like programming loving the legends right into the mainframe or whatever you want to call it. I was like, oh no, but I did like how they turned that around right at the end. They're like, oh no, you know, you still grew from that love or whatever, so that worked out. It wasn't like that much less enjoyableness. I don't know what words are in general. I thought it was like, I like it as a concept for the 100th episode, and I don't really have problems other than there was a lot of season one there, and I was like, season one wasn't good though. Like, I don't think we need to celebrate season one. Right. So that part was like a little bit silly. Also, I guess I would have liked maybe a little more if there could have been a more like one-on-one somehow with Rip Hunter and Gideon, since like that was like the original like main connection. I feel like there's like a whole episode, right, for Rip and Gideon back in the olden days. I don't even remember what happened in that episode, but it did happen. So anyway, so I thought that maybe like a little bit more of that connection could have been done. Aside from that, I don't really know. Like, I really love the actor who plays Bishop, and I'm sure he will be fun, but I did not think that last season was all that strong.
With Bishop,
so I'm not sure if they have better ideas for him this time, or if he's just going to come and be fun every once in a while. So I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, I agree about Bishop. I was really surprised to see him again. I was like, oh, did we not erase his memories? Yeah, I thought so too. And I think it's interesting that they brought him back, because like, I agree with Tati. Like, I think he's a great actor, but his character is frustrating. And also, like, of all the villains that the Legends have fought, I think it would have been more interesting to bring back, like, you know, Damien Dark or something for the 100th episode versus using Bishop again, because I feel like he's just not as interesting. And in general, like, I also appreciated the concept, and I thought it was generally well done, but I personally have no attachment to Gideon, and I feel like there was not, because of that, it wasn't as compelling to me. Like, I personally didn't care that she found her humanity or whatever, because Gideon, like, as she's always been an AI, and even when she's manifested in human form, like, if they had had a storyline prior to this about her finding her humanity, maybe then this would have been like a nice reminder for her that, yes, this happened and this is what made me who I am. But I didn't, like, there was no connection there for me. And it just, it reminded me sort of like The Flash 100th, where it was like, cool concept, but also you're focusing on the characters that didn't, like a new character in Gideon as a human who mm-hmm. doesn't have like as much of a stake in the show. Like, this is not why we watch. And I feel like all the other characters came second to that. And that was kind of frustrating. Like, I don't think we really learned any more about the legends themselves other than like, oh, you know, a walk through memory lane. And also, like, I agree with Tati about the whole season one thing, because it's like, whatever, I don't. You guys were here, and I know this, but, like, even seeing Hawkman, I was like, I don't. You guys are just, it was too many scenes of them almost fighting. And I'm like, this is, I remember, yes, there's a lot of men on this show all at once. And there was no real balance beyond, like, Sarah. And the other only woman who was on the show was not even in the episode, so. I don't know. I just feel like they could have done a lot more with the main characters of the show rather than just focusing on Gideon, because it loses that emotional connection to everybody else.
I think that's my main thing. Like, they're for a 100th episode, they, you know, had a lot of throwbacks of like older legends, but the current legends were almost non-existent in this episode. The only Tarazi siblings we got were, you know, Virus Tarazi. And, you know,
sad there, death moment.
There wasn't a lot of Sarah and Ava, or I think Nate, the only time we saw Nate, he was a virus. And so, like, it didn't really seem like they had a lot to do in their 100th episode. And I agree, like, it's a cool concept, but, like, also because Gideon has been a little bit detached from the legends this whole time, it also felt like the memories are kind of detached. We got a lot of season one with like Hawkman, Captain Cold, and Ray, Stein, Jax. But also, Jax was really the only one that interacted with Spooner and Astra, because that's the only one that's conscious. I think it would have been like more interesting if like Hawkman and Captain Cold, if they could like interact with Spooner and Astra or whatever, or, you know, if it was just like, the only person that got to interact was Gideon. And it's just kind of, you know, old things playing out instead of Spooner and Astra being able to interact with them. The only time they interact with them is if they're like viruses or whatever. So, you know, it still feels a little bit detached. And then also, I have to keep reminding myself, I'm like, she grew up in hell. She grew up in hell. She grew up in hell. But Astra in the beginning was it was really hard hearing her not really respect Gideon, and, you know, like, she and Spooner are on opposite sides, and they're supposed to show, like, that contrast or whatever, but it was just, like, hard to, I just had to keep reminding myself, like, you know, she grew up differently, cut her some slack, but I didn't like how Astra treated Gideon, really. But, you know, Astra also had to learn about Gideon's humanity at the same time as Gideon, so whatever. But, yeah, I felt like it's a cool concept for the 100th episode, but it didn't really feel like it was celebrating the current legends. And then also, we get Bishop, but we don't get any of the other previous big bads. So I feel like that, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
What did our legend stands, Shang and Swar, have to say? Did Shang have feedback for Legends?
Shang did have feedback for Legends. Okay. It says, best 100th episode. I will not be taking any rebuttals.
Okay.
Well then.
You can ignore everything we've just said, Shang. I love that the props team altered the bridge and the seats to turn it back to how it looked during season one. The nostalgia. Even though season one wasn't the best plot-wise, I really missed that square up, we take names and kick-ass vibes from the season one team. It was definitely great seeing familiar faces and them interacting with Gideon. Also the Easter eggs and the running joke about the bathroom. That was funny. Bebo. The only thing I got from Avalanche versus Esperanza was present captains versus future captains. I definitely love the episode. The writers really said Inception, but make it cheesy and chaotic. The episode definitely proved how far they came, both in the characters and the writing. I loved how it was Spooner and Astra, the newest members of the team, to go with Gideon on this journey to learn a thing or two about the old legends. I also loved how they used Gideon as a thread to go through the different legends, past and present. But I think we often forget Gideon is also technically an OG legend too, and it definitely gave a fresh yet nostalgic perspective. When Gideon sang with Sign, the death scenes, the legend celebrating all the holidays, book club, karaoke time, and finally the one shot to the hallway with the legends giving her advice, ending with her looking back on them. I'm unwell, ladies. Yes, I had to pause and cry for 10 minutes.
The book club was like one of, that's probably my favorite Gideon memory.
Does that mean Bishop is the villain again? Not too into that, though. Hopefully it's a fake out and we do get a new big bad. I don't think he was the one that made those robots. Perhaps mid-finale, they find out Bishop corrupted Gideon, made a new evil Gideon, and that Gideon sent out the robots. Or some sort of chain reaction happens in the mid-season finale and the future robots take over in, like in Terminator. Book club today, book club tomorrow, book club forever.
Yes, the book club.
You know what would be interesting if, like, if Sean's prediction about like Terminator Legends, and we've already seen that they've sent back a robot to be Hoover, what if they sent back Legends robots, and so we have like an episode of the Legend robot versions of them do stuff?
That would be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Suara says Legends 100th episode was absolutely fantastic. Amy Louise Pemberton gave a lovely performance as Gideon in the spotlight, who in many ways is the heart of the show. She's literally been through it all. It was almost like she's been an audience surrogate, traversing through all the emotional and humorous highs and lows the legends have been through to get to a fundamental understanding of what it means to be human. I'm so happy for Gideon. Loved Astra and Spooner as always in this episode as they tried to help her and got her to remember that humanity. Virus Gideon was a fascinating villain, basically representing all the sadness and pain that we compartmentalize and, if left unchecked, will drag us down. Gideon acknowledging that she has to simply accept her as the lows along with the highs, was honestly beautiful to watch. Life isn't always easy and fun. It's those low moments that can make us appreciate the highs. The writing in this episode was so smart, IMO. I loved all the cameos in this episode, especially seeing Ray and Nora and Leonard. I found it hilarious that they couldn't get Dominic Purcell back for Rory and use the body double. Just drunk on the floor.
That was kind of
sad.
It was. It is funny, but like in universe it's funny, but like out of universe it's sad that that happened, and also that we couldn't get to see like our dynamic duo of Ice and Fire. Captain, what are their names again? Thank you. You know what I'm saying.
Icy Hot.
Young Bishop making a comeback and rebooting the copy. I presume of Gideon, he was certainly worrying. Was he the one who blew up the Wave Rider? That seems too easy of an answer, but and I anticipate something more complicated. And that is that.
Expanding on my prediction, you know, like, because we recently did Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on Patreon. Shout out to Sonia, who was our guest on that episode, and a plug for you to go get Patreon so you can listen to it. But there is that one episode, or like the theme, was it season 4, where they had like
the framework?
The robot doubles.
Oh my god, yes.
And it's like, who is who are you? Oh. Are you really you? I think it would be really cool if the legends could do something like that, like have robot legends infiltrate the real legends and see if they can figure out who is who. What do you guys, what are some of your predictions?
I don't have any, but I like that one.
Bishop the mastermind, like it, how's Davies fit into this?
I just
like,
don't want Bishop to be the mastermind. I would prefer him not to be at all. But I forgot to mention that what I didn't like about this episode either, that is that Constantine was also not included in the walk down memory lane, because like he was also there. And you have Matt Ryan in the season anyway, so like you could just use him again.
I know, but they can't because they're haters.
Yeah, sad times. But that's all.
It wasn't even like a named mention either. She's right. Like Constantine is off somewhere. Yeah. Okay. Moving into our final show, Batwoman. This was Freeze, so it was themed around Mr. Freeze and Nora Freeze. An unfortunate incident downtown Gotham alerts Batwoman and the Bat Team to another missing trophy that has made its way into the wrong hands. And basically, a kid found one of Mr. Freeze's, bombs around and accidentally freezes their entire bus. which I hope that all those people are okay because that bus was like frozen. Meanwhile, a new member of the Jet family surfaces when I want to revolt because there's no way his name is spelled Marquise and it's like Marcus. It's like gentrifying his name. Like Jada.
Oh my God, I thought I was losing my mind because I saw it written out as Marquis and I was like, but I remember them saying Marcus. I'm so confused. What is his name?
I don't know when he was born, like what stage of wealth she was in, but I feel like his name was like Marquis probably, and then she got rich and gentrified it. So Marcus, because that's just what I'm going to go with. That's my headcanon because it just does not compute. Anyway, Marcus makes a not so subtle interest into Wayne Enterprises, and basically it was like, Ryan, I know you're my sister, I know my mama don't like you, but she don't like me either, or she doesn't believe in me, so let's team up and show her what's what. So Marcus wants to go in halfsies with Ryan on a business deal, and he shows up in the middle of Ryan talking to Jada about, hello, I'm your daughter, and then when Jada kicks Ryan out, then Marcus goes behind her back to Ryan at Wayne Enterprises and is like, look, I want to team up. Back on the streets, cryogenics is the name of the game, and the freeze bomb that blew up the bus was stolen from police custody. So now Sophie, she clues in the team that, you know, this thing is missing, and she reminds everyone that she's badass, especially in the middle of life-threatening situations. And in this time, it's when Ryan kind of tracks down the Nora and Dee, Nora Freeze and her sister Dee, and they are in kind of a situation because before Ryan can get to their house, a group of gang members led by a very attractive woman named Sloan apparently kidnaps him, and there's somebody that Sloan reports to that wants this cryogenic freezer thingy and wants Nora and Dee to show her how it works. Ryan interrupts. She gets locked into the cryogenic chamber, and if she stays in there for long, she's gonna get hypothermia and die, basically. Sophie keeps Ryan awake long enough for Batwing to not only rescue Nora, but also come after and rescue Ryan. Bad guys get away with Dee, so Batwoman and Batwing have to pursue and save Dee. Meanwhile, Mary is checking out Nora to make sure that she's okay, and Nora has been, she was cryogenically frozen at 34, but when she was taken out, she has been aging at double time. She's like old now, and so Mary's checking her out. And Alice is, being Alice, she has all these nanobite technology things in her, so she can't run away. And now they feel like bugs that are itching her, and she feels sick. And Mary's trying to get to the bottom of what is going on with Alice, because we're also reminded that Alice thought that their father had been writing her in prison, and that was not the case. Now she feels like there are things crawling in her skin, and it's all in her mind. So something is going on with Alice. Alice also turns it around on Mary, saying that, look, why did you hide Luke's PTSD? No one's going to respect you. They don't respect your opinion as the medical doctor. So Mary tests out that theory by confronting Luke and telling Ryan that she should not have cleared Luke for duty. And basically, it pretty much goes the way Alice said, and that Ryan kind of overrides her and says she needs Luke on the team. Finally, we have some Wildmore goodness. Like I said, Sophie talks to Ryan through her hypothermia to keep her awake. But also there's a little bit of like flirting in the back car, and we kind of see more of where that relationship could go. I just rambled a lot, but that's basically what happened.
I was like, really just
Greg Beeman was busy. The episode. I know. Greg Beeman was busy. Well, this is actually like a pretty good recap that I did not read through fully, but yeah. Greg Beeman was busy because he also directed this episode. This episode was written by Nancy Q. So, what sparked joy?
Well, I did like the Wildmore goodness that we got this episode. I thought that it feels really natural how they are building up the dynamic. I like that we now, you know, it still feels like they're getting to know each other. They're getting closer. And I loved that it was this episode, right? I didn't make it up, where Sophie was like, oh, I see that I'm the first person you come to when you need help.
Yes, she did.
But then you go to the team for the emotional support when I could be the emotional support. Hello. So I enjoyed that. I like that it really feels like we're in it for the long haul, I guess, right? We're not just diving into what could be a romance, short-term or long-term, and then breaking them up and getting them together, et cetera, right? It feels like it might be one of those friends, or, you know, it was kind of enemies or rivals kind of thing, mistrust to now friends to eventually lovers, whenever that's going to happen. So yeah, I really liked that. And I loved the whole scene with her, like, talking Ryan through the cryo chamber freeze machine, whatever. Speaking of that, this was probably, there's only been three, so it's like hasn't been that long, but this is the first one where I actually really liked what they did with the, you know, revival of the OG big bad, mostly because we actually did have Nora. So she's there. She's actually there. And the fact that she has a sister D was just, I don't know why that was funny to me, but I was like, okay, yeah, sure. Nora and her sister D. And that it was just like almost like total accidental reopening of the situation, as opposed to someone being like, oh, let me pick this up and now become Mr. Freeze 2.0 or Croc Jr. or whatever. Also, I thought that, like, the fight, or just the fact that we got, like, Batwing saving the day, getting to do some flying, using cryogenic powers, we got the Batmobile. It feels like a classic episode of whatever Batman show. I feel like it's been a while since we've gotten, like, everything at once. So I like that a lot. Also really like Marcus, wanting to team up with his, like, going half-seas with his half-sister. Why not? And also the fact that he had, like, this whole story. I don't know if it's, like, legitimately the truth, or that was, like, the story he told himself, where he was like, oh, well, she was like, you're the product of an affair that she had to keep hidden, or, like, whatever.
I'm so surprised that he is the older brother.
Yeah. Yeah, that was...
That was a twist.
Exactly. Because you would expect it to be, like, and then things got better for her, and then she had a kid that she kept, right?
Right.
So there has to be something. I like that. Like, it was surprising, but I also like that means that there's something about Ryan, specifically in the manner in which she was born, rather than just, like, the circumstances in general. Something about Ryan meant that Jada could not be with Ryan, and even now is like, I don't want anything to do with this, because it could somehow, like, I'm guessing...
It's somehow, like, somehow it could threaten her.
Exactly. Like, it'll threaten both of them, I guess, right? I don't know. Yeah. We'll see. But I do like that, like, that mystery now makes it like, well, I do need to get to the bottom of this, rather than just be like, okay, I'm just going to let this go because my mom is not interested. Glad that, I guess, we found the real Poison Ivy vine. Poison Ivy is coming. It feels like they're really building up to that. So they're getting me excited. Yeah. So overall, I thought it was a really good episode. I'm glad that we're still continuing. Like, it wasn't just a one-off with Mary and Luke. We are diving more into that, both in terms of Luke personally and his emotional crises about being out in the field or not, wanting to be on the field, but also struggling internally with that, and Mary trying to help him through it, and with the actual romance, and now having characters be like, oh, I see that this is a romance. We have turned on the romance dialogue options. So, and also the fact that Alice is still going begrudgingly helping the team after last week's episode, which I thought was going to maybe be the end of those collaborations, but clearly that is not the case, thankfully. May.
I like the Wildmore stuff, obviously. I am very much into that. I'm looking forward to what will come.
Funny. We had an anonymous like, tell me who did Batwoman this week. It's like, you should have known from like all the Wildmore standing.
Yes, indeed. Just because it was just so cute. And I feel like, I don't know, it's nice that they finally like dialed it up to 100, even with the Mary Luke stuff, because like last season it was just so dry with the main characters and trying to figure out like, where Sophie and Kate stand now that Kate was still alive, blah, blah, blah. But now that everyone is just untethered, you know, we're finally showing interest. Like, we're seeing it on screen rather than just talking about it vaguely in interviews without having to show it in the story. And I really like the fact that, like, you know, Sophie's gotten to a point where she's like, pick me, choose me, and is always there for Ryan with regards to everything that she has going on, but also Ryan's stepping closer to, like, confiding in her more emotionally, and the fact that Sophie was also calling her out on, you know, not, she doesn't want to just be there for her when she needs information, she wants to be there for her as an emotional support, and as, you know, more than just, here's this about your mom, or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I really like that, you know, build up towards their future relationship, I think. And also the fact that, like, she was the one to be really worried about Ryan when she was in the freeze chamber, and how that she tried to keep her awake. You can really, like, see her worry in that moment, which was really nice to see. And even, like, even some of the tension, because I know that they talked about building Mary and Alice's relationship, and I think that, like, it took a weird and interesting turn here in that Alice clung to the one thing she knows Mary doesn't have, which is, like, attention from people that she cares about a lot of the time, and so she used that against her in a way, and by, like, implanting, like, doubt about her relationships with her bat team. So I think that was really well done on Alice's part. I don't like that it created tension within the bat team, but I did like the fact that at least, like, Mary called out Luke for not being honest with Ryan about what he was going through, rather than just sitting on the sidelines. Cause, like, she's like, I'm a doctor, I'm also a friend, I need to tell you this information. Like, what you do with it, it's not my problem, but, like, you need to know regardless. And I think that at least she took a stand for what she thought was right. I also liked, like, I'm sad that they didn't really mention her name, because, like, even IMDb is like mercenary leader. And I'm like, what is that? But I had to go to her Instagram to find out her name.
I hope that means she's coming back.
I hope so. Because, like, the way that they went about it, it was unclear, because I'm like, who is this person? Clearly she has an agenda, but I just liked her vibe too. Like, her whole persona was really great, and she had, like, a great screen presence, and, you know, she clearly knew what she was doing. So I liked the actress who played her a lot. But that relationship was great. I even liked the fact that, like, Nora Freeze had the most personality of Nora Freeze in live action that I've ever seen. That she actually got a storyline, an interiority about, like, what it was that she was going through, because, you know, so often we just see the part of, like, Mr. Freeze wanting to save her, and she's always, like, frozen in the cryogenic tube or whatever, so we don't really get much about her. But here she's like, I've aged, this is my life, I want people to stop trying to save me. And I really like that she had, like, a lot of gumption. She's like, I understand your concern, but, like, this is how it is, and there is no curing me, like, let it go. So I really like that she got to speak for herself rather than being the person who was always kind of doesn't have a voice, and people are just always trying to save her all the time, whether it's her sister or Mr. Freeze. So I really like that aspect of her storyline, and also that it sort of fueled a lot of the character dynamics with the Bat team as well. And Marcus also, like, being unexpected in that. At first, I thought he was flirting with Ryan. I was like, oh, no, wait till he finds out who she is. And he's like, I already know who you are. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is great. This was a nice twist. Yes. So I really like that he knew who she was, and also gave us, like, the backstory with Jada, like, disappearing for 9 months or whatever, and causing, and her even having an affair. Because I thought, too, that she had Ryan before she became who she is now, and before she married whoever she married later on. So that was a great tidbit of information. And also the fact that the potential of them, like, working together behind Jada's back is really interesting, and also gives, like, very pretty awesome, like, sibling dynamic that we could get there. And then throwing Jada in the mix too is just, it's a fascinating storyline. So I'm looking forward to that. And yeah, just, like, a solid episode in terms of, like, character stuff. So I'm looking forward to the rest of the season.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this episode. I agree with y'all on having Nora Freeze be the central character in an episode about Mr. Freeze's trophy or whatever. Just because, you know, it's not like the others, like you guys said, that, you know, some random picks it up and now they're Mr. Freeze. So I also liked Luke's like mini rant with Ryan about like why he's got like a doctor of PhD, he's like Mr. Freeze. And like Ryan's like, well, Captain Cold's not a captain. So I thought that was like funny. But yeah, because, you know, we usually, when you hear about Mr. Freeze's story and Nora Freeze is never really a part of that story, so it was a good way to,
you know, where she was.
What?
Harley Quinn, the Harley Quinn animated series, people taking their pages from,
yes,
Harley Quinn.
Yes.
Where she was also like, stop, I don't want to be saved.
That's true. But I like that we got this, and I also think it was really interesting how the effects of the cryo chamber just like sped up her, you didn't really stop anything, you just kind of sped up her lifespan. So I thought her story was like really interesting. I thought she was an interesting person, and how you know, like you said, that, you know, all these people are doing these things for her, but no one's really asking her what she wants. So I thought that, and the reason that she has gone so long without speaking, because she knows it's coming from a place of love, and so it's just kind of hard to tell the truth. And I like how that kind of connected to Mary, in, you know, keeping secrets, and, you know, it's out of like a place of love or whatever, but you have to kind of like come out and tell the truth and just like, you know, put it out there kind of thing. I really enjoying this dynamic, because I was also surprised about Marcus, because I feel like it could have been gone another way where he is just like his mom and they're both, because he's grown up with money and he's just like high sedity and an adversary, a second adversary to Ryan against like the Jet family. But it was like a nice twist that he was like wanting to partner with her and wanting to partner with her against their mom. So I feel like that's really interesting. I'm also like really, like I said, more intrigued by the fact that he is older than her and what that situation is now, because it's not what I originally expected it to be. I like that Ryan went with the intention of being like, I'm not coming here to like judge you, because it feels like she took Sophie's advice, or heart to heart to heart, and that we don't know what Jada's situation was, and so she was trying to come from a place of like understanding, and then that didn't go the way that she expected it to go. So I that whole family dynamic is very interesting to me. I liked, I feel like, you know, last week I said I'm on the ride, I'm not gonna like woohoo unless I feel something, but now I feel like I'm getting in the groove of like the little Wadmore roller coaster, and, you know, stuff is starting to happen, and I'm like, oh, okay. So just, and it feels like it's coming out very organically, in the sense that we went from them not trusting each other to Sophie figuring out who Ryan is, Batwoman, and trying to like earn her trust organically. And then Ryan kind of opened the door with his mom mystery, and Sophie is again proving that, you know, she can be an emotional support as well as a good partner to Ryan. I thought it was interesting, like her conversation with Ryan, trying to keep her awake and saying like she was upset. Like I thought we were friends, I thought we were going somewhere, but you didn't come to me with this like emotional thing. You went to Hamel Fox. And so how, you know, Ryan is like learning more things about Sophie. Like, you know, she still like has this wall and that Sophie's trying to like break through, and Ryan starts to learn more about her. I thought it was so funny, like me and the bat mobile with like Luke and talking to Sophie over the comms, and, you know, Luke is like, are you flirting with Sophie right now? And how Ryan kind of like embarrassed by it. So I feel like those were like really nice little nuggets to something that could be potentially blossoming between them. So that was great. I also like the continuation of like Hamel Fox, and generally like Alice, like Rachel's mannerisms as Alice, teasing Mary about having something for Luke. He's like, oh, you love him. And the fact that she went through like Luke's medical files, and, you know, I think it was like, it's not joyful that she's spreading seeds of doubt with Mary on and her place on the team with the others. But it is kind of like it opens up an interesting thing now that Mary is a real doctor. Might have real consequences to you not standing up to your Hippocratic oath. And I think that opens up a different door for Mary and establishing more her place on the team as a medical doctor. And there are times where she needs to be firm and say, you know, this is my area of domain and you need to kind of respect it because I'm responsible for keeping you guys healthy kind of thing. So I think that's interesting setup. Sloan, mercenary lady, I don't know why there was so much sexual tension with her and Ryan. And
y'all are really like, into that.
Like, you didn't feel it. Like, I felt it. Like, it was like her presence was there and it's just kind of, you know.
You were ready.
So, yeah, I'm ready for her to be more than just like that one episode where you don't even know her name. And she
like,
had
is this the love triangle?
Right. <She's the third> one. And she had red hair. I'm like, is this like, you know. Is this panning out to Poison Ivy? And then we get the vine at the end. The vine at the end was such a great cliffhanger. Because now we know that we're going to get into it some more and, you know, what's going to happen to Mary. So that was great. But I'm just like, I'm trying to like connect some dots and make it make sense. What did not spark joy about this episode?
Well, sad that Jada does not want to have a relationship with Ryan, obviously. Well, I don't think that was a great place to start. And also, like, kind of like, it was almost like she's like threatening her or whatever, right? Like, it's gonna be bad for you if we hang out. It's very sad. And I think that, obviously, like, Alice is just gonna do what Alice does, but Alice trying to mess with Mary over Luke was not cool, bro. As well as, even though, you know, I've been waiting for Hemmelfox to happen, I feel like the way they're doing it now is, like, switch on, right? So, like, last episode, they're like, oh my god, all this sexual tension when we are together. And now, they're like, I know that you love him. And I've based this on that one interaction that you guys had that I was not present for, and also on the writer's brains in previous episodes that they didn't actually make it to the screen. And I was like, are you? I feel like everyone should be shocked because I'm shocked that it's actually manifesting on screen. So that was like a little bit too quick for me. Yeah, just overall, I would like to see, I don't know, I guess it's not possible for Alice and Mary to be bestie sisters because Alice did kill Mary's mom, but I would like to see, you know, they're the only members left of their family on this screen, so I would like to see, like, maybe the building of whatever complicated family dynamic can be built out of the ruins of the Kane family with the two of them as time goes on. And I guess this is, like, a start, but it's not, like, the start that I would have chosen. So there you go.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because when Alice did say that, I was like, how do you know? We just found out.
I'm going to let it slide, though, just because, like, her first Rachel's, like, portrayal of it, and also I feel like it was like a parallel between Alice noticing something between Mary and Luke noticing something between Sophie and Ryan. So I will allow it.
Okay. I mean, I've let it slide too. It's just like the love part. I'm like, are we there yet? But
I mean, that's Alice just being like, yeah, ridiculous.
Right. But is she being ridiculous?
I feel like you love him. You want to kiss him.
But I did not like the fact that we didn't know Sloane's name on screen. Like, we didn't really get a sense of like, who was she working for? Was she working for herself? Why does she need the
who's interested in cryogenics,
like, who's interested in it, what she's trying to save someone she loves, like, what is going on there? So I feel like that aspect of the story was very vague, and it was frustrating because she was a good character, and I feel like we didn't really get enough of why she was doing the things that she was doing. She was just there to cause mayhem, and I'm like, I want more from this. Sort of like the previous villains are like, yes, I'm doing this for this reason, but we didn't really get that little, you know, villainous delivery from her. So that was, did not spark joy. Other than that, I don't really have anything else for this episode. So yay episode.
I like this episode. I've already talked about my dislike of Marcus being called Marcus. Like, whatever. I have a mini quibble about, like, Mary calling Alice delusional, because you're on your whole "we don't say the C word" soapbox, like, last week. And I feel like delusional is just a synonym to crazy. So I thought it was, you know, like, why call Alice, like, delusional if you're, you know, that's why I think, like, last week we were talking about, or the week before, about the writers and the crazy agenda. And, you know, points could be made with the whole Arkham Asylum part of Gotham, but it also feels just kind of like half measures or half steps, half-assed. And this is like one example, I think, of it being a little bit half-assed, or just only, you know, used in, for certain plots or certain storylines, no real depth behind it. So there. And then there was no Renee Montoya in this episode, so that was very sad. Hopefully she comes back into the story, because I've enjoyed her being in episodes, so her not being in the episode was not joyful to me. I also don't know why Sophie couldn't just, like, instead of having Sophie talk to Ryan, stay awake, Ryan, even though you're freezing, you're going through hypothermia. Like, why didn't Luke call Sophie to go save Ryan? Or, you know, why did someone have to stay and at the comms when both y'all could have been out there? I don't know. I thought that was what she's going to be mad about in the beginning. Like, I'm mad that you didn't call me to go and help you. And now you're stuck in a cryogenic chamber. I just thought it was, like, really weird that both Luke and Sophie could have gone out to help, and Sophie had to stay behind the comms. I don't know. I thought it was odd.
True, true. She's got the prowess.
Yeah, she can kick ass. She can go in there, you know. What did our Bat fans have to say?
Many things. We will start with Suarez Batwoman feedback. He says, before he forgets, the Wildmore content in this episode was so good. They're flirting. I repeat, they're flirting. Batwoman was amazing. Also, while acknowledging that what that Ruby went through was heinous, I can't help but love this amazing show and the wonderful portrayals by its main cast and the frankly stunning writing. This show has become so important, and I hope that the leadership at the top has made things way safer for the cast and crew, and that Ruby will have justice for what happened to her. But onto the episode. Loved old Nora Freeze. I loved how she was just so over it. She was over being a victim that everyone, from Mr. Freeze to Batman and beyond, had to save. Ryan doing her best to save her while doing some kick-ass bojutsu, by the way, was so great. Loving the family drama she now must deal with, even if it is a bit fast. Really like Marcus so far, hoping that Ryan will be able to have a bond with her brother, and honestly, Jada as her mother, even though she's been pretty awful so far. But there clearly was a deeper reason that she gave Ryan up and want absolutely nothing to do with her. It has to be more than being ashamed of an affair. Or at least I presume it is. I actually really enjoyed Mary and Alice's dynamic in this episode, although I cussed out Alice for saying that Mary's friends don't notice her if they don't need her. I don't think the show has fully grappled with Alice killing Mary's mom. That deserves at least a whole episode of its own. Mary ultimately telling Ryan the truth about Luke's PTSD and enduring Luke's upset feelings on it was honestly heartbreaking. I wonder how they'll go forward with it in upcoming episodes, and I hope it'll be a deep exploration of mental health. Sonia says... Okay, in the opening scene, this dude's reaction to missing the bus was like way too much. Just calm down. Right? So I was like, sir, please. It happens all the time. Also, when the bus froze because of the Victor Freeze device thingy, same dude was too happy that other people on the bus died. Like, who is this guy and why is he such an a-hole? Alice is being so annoying with the fake cough and whining about the nanobots and whatnot. Just, like, shut up. Nora Freeze from Crisis is in this episode aged into an old woman, thank God, so we don't have to watch Stephen Amell's wife try to act again.
I was not going to bring up the fact that she was Nora Freeze in that one.
I'm not.
I completely forgot. Yeah,
I remembered, but I just did not want to.
Also, why are there 1,000 women in DCTV named Nora? This is very true. I mentioned that while I was live tweeting. I was like, there's so many Noras. I can't keep
Somebody's wife was named Nora or their sister or something, and the top DC executives, yeah. And it just like
filtered down.
Yeah.
Who is this woman trying to steal the cryo chamber, and who is she trying to steal it for? Hopefully she's not just a one-off villain, because I really liked her despite her being evil. Batwing fighting people and saving Ryan. Yay, although I agree with Mary that although the suit is ready, Luke is not. Love the wild more scenes with Sophie trying to keep Ryan from falling asleep. And also when Luke was like, are you flirting with Sophie right now? Alice taunting Mary about Luke's PTSD and then talking about how Mary likes Luke. Is Alice a secret Hamill flock shipper like all of us? Nora not caring if she dies and Alice being all, you're the worst hostage I have ever taken. Perhaps I'm in the minority here, but I agree with Mary. Like, she's stuck in between a rock and a hard place with being the team doctor and having this knowledge of Luke's obvious PTSD and being friends with him and whatnot, but also needing to look out for the good of the team. Disagree with Ryan saying we all take risks when we put on these suits or whatever when Mary asks what about next time, because there's a difference between somebody without PTSD putting on the suit, knowing they can get hurt or killed by a villain trying to protect people, and someone with PTSD putting on the suit and something going wrong and getting hurt or killed, or even worse, getting a civilian hurt or killed. Mm-hmm. Luke being mad at Mary made me so sad. Like, how did they go from Luke's heart racing from being near Mary to Hamill Fox angst in one episode?
Right? 0-60.
Also, Jada is so annoying. Like, I get not wanting a relationship with Ryan, but threatening to take down Wayne Enterprises is a bit much. Marcus is interesting, and I'm excited to see what more they do with this character, as it seems like Jada just gives him a title with no real responsibilities, and he wants more.
Exactly.
Also, love that he figured that Ryan was his sister. Anyway, can't wait for the next episode and to see what happened to Mary and see more Jet Wilder family drama. Thank you, everyone, for the feedback. We will post it on Tumblr.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Did you read Chong as well?
Did Chong have that one feedback? I think it was just
he did not. Okay.
Girl and Legends, yeah.
He did not. Predictions, first of all. What do you think?
Wild Moore is coming.
Yeah, Wild Moore is coming, obviously. Obviously.
And Jordan's coming back in the next episode because she was in the preview.
Oh, yes, that's right. Something is going to happen to Jordan, isn't it?
Yeah. I guess she gets kidnapped or something.
She better not die.
She better not die. How long it takes for somebody to realize that Mary has been kidnapped.
Right? Maybe the same people who kidnapped Mary will kidnap Jordan? I don't know.
Interesting. Who do you think will...
I'm gonna know there's gonna be like a say that Sloane is hopefully working with Poison Ivy because I want her to be.
I like see like the red hair, like something's going. There's a connection. I'm telling you. we know there's gonna be like a love triangle. Who do we think that you know? And obviously, Wildmore appears to be two points of that. Who's the third?
I don't know. Like, I feel like I haven't introduced her yet.
I want it to be Renee, but like Renee's not even like in the in the game right now, so
yeah, maybe somebody she meets at the party, because Ryan will be confused about what Sophie is to her, and then that other person will come through and be like, hey,
I thought Sophie was confused, like, because Marcus is like, I'm Ryan's brother, and Sophie's like, I'm Ryan's something. Oh, wouldn't there be like a to West Allen when Felicity asks like Cisco, like, who is Iris to Barry? She's like, she's his. Something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, lays the gumption for side B, Legends and Batwing. Well, I guess like Gideon would be default for Legends, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes. For Batwoman,
Lady or AI with gumption.
AI with gumption. Yeah.
AI with gumption.
Batwoman.
I want to say. Well, I want to say Sloane, honestly. And also Mary for having the gumption to stand up to her friends. Me. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that was...
Like, it had to be. It's not easy. I would give it to Mary with a, you know, honorable mention for Sloane. Sloane, okay. The nameless mercenary.
So we have Mary Sloane on Batwoman. Gideon for Legends. Who did we say Supergirl? I forgot.
Said Kelly and Alex together.
Danson for Supergirl, and then Cindy for Stargirl.
Oh, so many choices this week.
Tati, do you have
any thoughts? I want to say Cindy for me.
I feel like, I think that's Cindy because it's like cool to see the culmination of like who she once was now combining with like maybe what she can become under different circumstances, right? Like still being like she can be the one that takes on the like getting your hands dirty tasks of the JSA.
Yeah.
But for a better purpose now.
I agree. I feel like I was leaning towards Cindy as well because she played a major part in behind the scenes of rallying the troops and getting Yolanda back when Courtney has tried like twice. And
also calling
it.
For reinforcements.
Yeah. Like she's thinking ahead. Mm-hmm. And she also like owned up to the fact that, you know, they were like squabbling about it at first, but she owned up to the fact that maybe it was not a good idea to release a demon into the world because she was mad. So she took accountability. So I think that that all goes towards Cindy being the lady with gumption this week. Yay! Snaps fingers. Tune in next week to the finale of Stargirl. And Supergirl is not finale, but we still have it. Legends and Batwoman. We will do this all again. Same bat time, same bat. Well, hopefully an earlier bat time because we were late this time. So sorry. But we will be back for you next week. So see you later. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.